and welcome to We're Reading Dirty Books. I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And we're happy to have you back for, sorry, I don't know.
Thank you for coming back. We are a podcast that reads and talks about paranormal romance novels. We're glad to be back.
Yeah.
It's been a weird night. It's been a day. It's already really late, and I didn't realize that it was a recording night until Kalina texted me and said, hey, so are you coming over to record? And I was like, oh my god, I actually thought it was Wednesday, and we record on Thursdays, and nope, I was leisurely having dinner with my family, and just playing words with friends with Kalina, and she's like, wait a minute.
Why aren't you here?
Normally, we're having dinner.
Why are you playing with friends with me right now?
So we're having a little bit of a late start, and
it also means that I've had like 4 beers now instead of only like 1 or 2. So we'll see how this goes.
It's gonna be awesome.
I'm on beer 5.
Holy shit! I was that late. Hey, I got here in like less than 20 minutes.
You did. You hauled ass across town. It was amazing.
I had one red light the whole way here.
Yeah,
I was.
And there. Luckily, because it was later, there was no traffic.
Also, that
helps. It helps. Definitely. In Denver. To leave after rush hour.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Well, anything else fun going on?
No.
Oh.
Yes.
No.
No.
It would be not good to talk about that in this episode. Sorry, guys. Maybe we'll cut that out, or maybe you'll just have a weird moment.
Teaser, teaser, teaser. I'm not cutting that out. I'm going to let you guys just keep hanging on to whatever that is.
It's
going to
be terrible.
Because I also don't know what she's talking about. So what do we read?
So for this episode, we read Guilty Pleasures by Laurel Hamilton, narrated by Kimberly Alexis. We went to old school. This book is from 93.
1993.
It was the very first of the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter books, and we thought it was time we give her due in the genre. You know, who doesn't love a beeper? Right? Hey, millennial. Pager? Do you understand what a beeper is?
Do you guys know what that is? You put in certain numbers. We're fucking millennials too. Spell something. 80085 spells boobs.
Boobs. anyway. So, yeah. So, we went. Well, this is a little bit. This is 25 fucking years.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. I don't know if you guys remember from, like, I think episode 1 when I talked about this being my very first romance novel that I've ever read. So I was pretty excited to get into it. I'm glad that we finally got into it. We got to listen to it and we didn't start in the middle of the series because we did a couple of episodes later. Was like, let's just start in the middle of the series. And you're like, okay, let's do it. And then you're like, nope, I immediately regret that decision.
What did we do?
No, we didn't.
Oh.
We were going to do this series in the middle, like with like the 7th book.
Yeah.
And then you were like, no, I can't.
It's real uncomfortable. I'd like to see how characters develop.
Yeah.
And this book is very evidently a first book. Mm-hmm. Or like a, you know, first I don't, of a series I do book. Not know if it's Laurel's first ever novel.
Right.
I don't know. I didn't do any research. Why would I do research for my own podcast? That seems silly.
Why?
So I can't speak to that. But regardless of whether it's her first ever or not, it is definitely at least a first of a series. But it also does kind of feel like an early work.
Yeah.
You know, it's not perfect. It's good, though. It's fun. It's entertaining. And god damn it, I have not heard about pagers in so long. It was quite entertaining. I was just like, oh my god, she's stopping for payphones, guys.
Oh, you so guys. Funny. I'm also rewatching the Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah.
And Rory's got the pagers going on thing. And I'm like, wow.
The very early episodes.
Mm-hmm, the like, very god. Early episodes.
That was a thing.
Yeah, it was.
I never had a pager. Did you ever have a pager?
I did. I had a pager once, but like,
Drug dealers.
I don't even remember. I don't even remember how they really worked. I think you bought it and then you got a certain amount of pages that you can have and then you could refill it later. I bought the pager and had my 50 pages or whatever it was and then never refilled it. So I know I can afford it.
Did it have its own number?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how they worked.
You put in the number and then you put in the message or your number or 80085. For boobs. There were different things, like you could spell it, I love you. It was really, you could do all sorts of different type of messages.
I literally missed the entire stage. I knew one person in our age group who had a pager.
Yeah.
and yeah. the rest of us didn't. And then eventually cell phones came out and we all went.
It was very like it was fast.
It was like a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, they were around for like doctors and on-call people, mm-hmm. I think a lot longer.
Yes.
But in the mainstream like populace, it was very short-lived.
Yeah.
Welcome to We Discuss Old Technology podcast. I hope you guys are in for a treat when we discuss 8-tracks. No.
I don't know 8-tracks. I know Laserdisc, Beta, video cassettes.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Betamax before the VHSs. Mm,
before the VHS. Those were cute. They were adorable.
Anyway. So we'll move along now. Everyone got bored. So this is Guilty Pleasures. It is our introduction to Anita Blake. In this book, she is partially Vampire Hunter, but I think more we are introduced to her as a
she's an
reanimator.
Yeah, she works for Animators Inc. She's a reanimator. She brings up the dead.
Creates zombies.
Yeah. She puts zombies. Them back.
Sure.
But she does.
Sometimes. Sometimes they go back. Yeah, so she's a reanimator mostly, and she gets drug into this crazy investigation that vampires are being killed in her city. And the head vampires of the town are very upset by this because, you know, we don't want to be murdered. We're the murderers.
Right.
Vampires are the people who kill people.
We're supposed to do the killing.
No one should be killing vampires. That's awful. So... obviously, this is a world where vampires are out. Zombies are out if you can have a job where you raise zombies. People need to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
Ghouls, wares. Those are the big things we were introduced to in this book.
Yeah.
So she's gets drug into this against her will. She has no desire to do this. She would never work for vampires if she had the choice. She hates vampires. She has a history of being attacked. She ends up meeting the master vampire of the city, who we think is named...
Nicolaus or Nicolaus. I don't know how it's exactly pronounced.
Okay. She's a tiny little girl who was turned into a vampire a thousand years ago.
Yeah.
And apparently her name is weird.
Yeah.
I think it's Nicolaus.
We'll say Nicolaus.
Okay. That's good.
That sounds fine to me.
Let's just say that. That's what we're going to say. But she is Nutjob. Who wants Anita to solve this case, but then also kind of wants to kill her.
Yeah.
Or turn her into a slave. We don't know. It's very confusing. She can't decide what she wants. And, like, don't keep torturing the person who you think is going to solve the fucking problem for you.
Yeah.
That doesn't help. As I think when you first brought up the series, as you did mention, it doesn't necessarily start off very sex heavy.
Mm-hmm.
The series kind of grows into that, into its more romance title as the series goes. So, yeah, there's not a lot of sex in this book. In fact, there's none. There is a lot of sex situations.
Yes. There are.
In the very beginning, she ends up at a strip club with her friend who's getting married. One of this friend's co-workers, Catherine's co-worker, takes them out to a strip club for a bachelorette party, which is actually a setup mm-hmm. by the vampires. And it's a vampire strip club where humans strip and then get bit by vampires. And then the women get bit by vampires. I don't know. It's some version of stripping and vampiring like and...
Yeah.
Biting.
Humans getting bit and people getting naked.
Yep. That's that. So she meets Philip. He is a stripper at the club.
He's a vampire stripper.
Well, he's not a vampire.
Philip's a
No.
He's not a vampire?
Philip is a human.
I thought he was a vampire.
Oh, no.
This whole time I thought he was a vampire. Oh, is he just a
human.
A slave. Not a slave. What do they call him? Not a pet. They own them. Property.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I don't know why I thought he was a vampire.
No, no. Because he's out, like, they go to lunch and shit. He's all out running around during the day and shit. Oh,
surprise. I don't know what book I just read. Anyways, keep going.
So, I think for the book, they're kind of trying to play him up as the, like, the romantic potential for Anita. I think that's kind of the hints. Like, he seems to kind of like her. He stands up to his master for her in a couple places, which is uncharacteristic of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up getting killed for it. You know? Sorry. Spoilers.
Yeah.
But, again, since there's no real sex, that's the only kind of sexual tension there is for Anita is with Philip. Because he is, like, apparently drop-dead gorgeous. And all the women around who see him are, like, tongue hanging out, drooling on themselves. And so he's
like,
hanging
Google.
Out. Yeah. And he's pretending to be her boyfriend the whole time. Like, because he's, you know, apparently it'll keep her safe. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. but she's not interested, and there's this whole tension thing with that. And anyway, Philip gets kidnapped, she has to save him, she doesn't, he dies, she goes on a rampage and kills all the vampires.
She kills the master vampire.
Mainly the master. She also kills, yeah, all of her real lackeys.
His minions, or her minions, yeah.
The ones that are real assholes.
Yeah, yeah.
Who,
yeah,
are, like, threatening her life and shit.
Yeah.
So,
and Nicolaus then, you know, is a
oh, fuck.
Bitch.
Jesus, we needed her dead.
She's a cunt.
Oh, I needed her. She was a twat.
Cunt twat.
Cunt twat.
Twat cunt.
Awful. Although I'm not sure that being, like, a child who gets turned into a vampire and living for 1,000 years makes you anything less than a twat.
Yeah.
I feel like that's just your only chance.
I feel...
You have one direction to head, if that's your life. That's your arc.
I think so. She 1,000 years ago, she came from a bad time, man.
Yeah.
A very bad time.
Like, so, in 900 AD. So, not, yeah, great.
Yeah, I would have to say.
Not a great life you're living. I think you're probably a serf of some sort. A vassal. Anyway, we should move on. I'm not a historian.
I can't.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Words.
Anyway, words. So yeah, so then, and it just kind of, it seems to put her on her path of being more aggressive-y, hunter-y,
yeah,
towards the vampires.
Yeah, I mean,
but she... also it mixes her in, because a lot of shit happens with her and Philip.
Yep. Nope. Jean-Claude.
Jean-Claude, the, yeah, other French name. Jean-Claude, that kind of gives her, she's not whole human anymore, or like not regular, right, standard human anymore.
She gets hurt during an altercation and he has to bite her pretty much to save her, but he doesn't transform her. She doesn't turn into, or wait, no, he doesn't bite her. He gives her
the mark.
Yes. And so,
no explanation, guys. We can't help you.
It's just pretty much now she's got his protection. She's almost sort of like his human, but not really. She's almost equal, but not really. It's kind of confusing.
It's very confusing. The biggest outcome of the first mark was she can now look at vampires in the eye.
Yeah,
because before she wouldn't be able to look any of them in the eye. She'd have to look like at their like nose or their chest, because it's dangerous to look in their eyes. They will hypnotize you and, mm-hmm, control you. So part of her job is to deal with vampires who she can't look in the eye. So it's very awkward. But since with the first mark, then she started being able to look them all in the eye. And then he gave her the second mark unwittingly somehow through magic. Yeah, we got a lot of children above us, guys. We maybe should mention this. A whole giant family moved in upstairs.
That's so funny, because you're like waving your arms around. I'm like, that's never made that much noise before.
Nope, it's all the children.
Dang you, kids. Get off our roof. Okay.
And, yeah, so she's like two marks into some kind of human vassal, like, relationship with vampires, which,
yeah,
actually gives her powers and protection.
Yeah, especially from his coven, because now they actually look to her as almost like a leader also. So she becomes something of a, like, they have to respect her the same way that they respect Jean-Claude. And he is the master, well, he becomes the master of the city because Nicolaus dies. Oh my god! What the fuck? What the hell are they doing up there?
I think they jump up and down on and off beds.
Wow. We apologize, people. I mean, we talked about this last episode, and they didn't come out. Now they're... Wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I know. It's real fun.
I'm sorry you had to limit that.
Anyway.
Wow.
Okay, it seems to have stopped. We're going to move on.
No, what happened?
Damn it.
Anyway.
We don't have a better place to record.
No, not yet, until Dan builds us our studio, and he's just mean. He hates everything fun. So,
All right. So, Anita and Philip.
I'm really glad that you brought up that he wasn't a vampire, because my whole time I was thinking he was a vampire. Mm. I don't know why.
It is confusing, because he was biting and getting bit.
Maybe,
and you would think more people would end up vampires doing that.
That's probably why I thought he was.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because then, like, Monica, like, bit him.
Yeah, she did.
Why do you just bite a human? What the fuck is that? Monica's a real problem, guys. We hate Monica.
She's the traitor of the human race.
Yeah. She traded her friendship with Catherine and took her to a vampire strip joint where Catherine got mind controlled by a vampire, and then Anita now has to do the bidding of the vampires to save her friend.
Yeah.
That's how this all happened.
And then her memories got erased.
Well, that was Anita's partly doing, and I didn't agree with that. It was a poor choice, friend. Poor choice. I will never erase your memories. Thank you. I will let you know that you get mind fucked by a vampire.
Thank
and
you.
And that your life is in danger and that your coworker betrayed you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you should I know that highly information.
Appreciate that. Fuck yeah. Because I couldn't. Know.
Like, if you erase someone's memory, you can't then come to them, by the way, you shouldn't hang out with Monica. She's a bitch. Like,
she's
if you.
She's going to say, oh, why? We had so much fun at the bachelorette party.
Nothing bad has ever happened because of Monica.
Right. No, wrong.
Wrong.
You're wrong.
Anyway, so speaking of Philip and scars, in this book it seems like scars are very sensual.
Scars are a thing that like to get licked and
touched,
kissed and bit
repeatedly,
more.
Like, yeah.
Scars are not sexy. They're not like tattoos.
No.
I mean, well, like, not all tattoos are sexy, but yeah. So
it was confusing.
And they're also like, Anita's got a ton of scars.
Yes, she's been attacked by vampires, so she has a lot of scar damage from that. And that like helps her get into this world of people who like to be bit by vampires because they all have scars. So they just assume that she's one of them because she has scars.
Right.
And every time Philip's scars get touched, he gets very, like, even he if they're not being aroused. Touched by vampires, I'm very confused.
I don't even know how you have any sensation left. I have scars. I scar very easily. I have very stupid, sensitive, stupid skin. I scar from fucking mosquito bites. Look, that's a mosquito bite. You see that dark spot?
Mm-hmm.
That was a mosquito bite. I have a scar from it. I have a scar across my lower abdomen from a C-section I had. I can't fucking feel anything down there. That was 4 years ago. So I don't know how they can feel anything. From
I know. I thought it was weird too.
That is.
I was confused by it.
Do you guys get aroused by getting your scars licked? I don't know. Let us know.
I think it's gotta be all tied into the vampire-y bite thing.
Maybe they're extra sensitive.
Maybe they have vampire stuff in them that makes them
sensitive. Maybe they're saliva.
And that's why she had to use all of the holy water to burn out her bite.
Yeah, because they have venom.
Oh, I missed that part. All right. We're going to say it's the venom in the scars.
Just, yeah.
Okay, we're moving on now.
Vampire venom.
So, for a good chunk of the book, when Anita and Philip interact, I got a little bit of an issue with Philip. Because, so she first meets him at the club. She doesn't get to know him or anything. He just is on stage interacting with the ladies at the strip club, and he's getting bit by a vampire. That's what he's on stage doing, I think.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
He is.
And then the next day, he shows up at her office and wants to know what happens to Jean-Claude, right? And they go to lunch, and then he just starts, like, following her around and helping her. Right?
Yeah, he comes with, they were looking for Jean-Claude?
Yeah, he was looking for Jean-Claude. Because he claimed to not know what happened to Jean-Claude. So he said, hey, where's Jean-Claude? And so then she told him an abbreviated version of what happened the night before. But then, remember, he said that he'd actually been working for Nicodemus? No. No. I knew I was going to do that at some point.
What's Nicodemus? Is that another character you know?
He's the rat from Secret of Nim.
Oh my god, he is!
I love that movie.
Oh my god, we watched that a couple, like, 2 years ago with you.
Oh, I love Nicodemus. Anyway, not Nicodemus, Nicolaus.
Yeah.
Oh god, so confusing. Anyway, this is all beside the point. What I really wanted to talk about was that he's a child, a baby child, who is annoying and is emotionally manipulative.
Oh my god, he's sad all the time. And just by the drop of a dime, you'll say something and he's got a sad face on.
Especially Anita. Like, yeah. He seems to want her approval and to be upset whenever she is harsh or realistic about him.
Honest.
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 Because she met him in a vampire strip club and watched him voluntarily get bit by a vampire.
Yeah.
She has feelings about that that she does not approve.
She hates vampires. She does not approve of vampires at all.
Does not like it. And so she's hanging out with this guy and he's all like being flirty and like trying to win her over and like seduce her. And she's just like, dude, I'm not into you.
And then he gets pouty.
And then he like cries.
He literally cries and he gets pouty. No, he does. He did have a harsh past.
He has a traumatic history, which we will give him credit for. But I still don't think that, like, I just couldn't decide, like, what his deal was. Like, did he legitimately want Anita to like him, or was that some kind of game he was trying to play because Nicolaus told him to seduce her?
I feel like that was just who he was.
I think so too.
He had been broken down so much by his attack from a vampire when he was, like, an adolescent. He was, what, 12 or something?
I think they said 12.
Yeah. And so he has been broken.
Okay.
He's a broken person. He doesn't know how to cope with this, and now he's working in a strip club with vampires who control him and stuff, so he maybe he doesn't understand how to work his emotions and to, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And men in general really aren't taught how to accept feelings, work feelings, or anything, except for, I guess, he cries all the time, so maybe he does.
He doesn't actually cry, I'm exaggerating. He pouts.
He has cried a couple of times. He had tears.
Okay.
There was at least once.
But yeah, and I hate it because he's manipulating Anita.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't say anything overly cruel.
No, she's just honest.
She's not, like, seeking to hurt his feelings.
Right.
She's just like, dude, just, I'm not interested, leave it alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, or says side snide things about vampires, and he just gets sad. And every time he does it, she has to, like, turn around and, like, coddle his emotions.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, no, Nick, not Nick, I don't know anymore who I'm talking about. Philip, it's okay. It's like, you know, I kind of like you sometimes. I don't know.
She had to do that constantly.
I just don't. I'm so tired of women having to mollycoddle male emotions. Like, it is so fucking, I'm so fucking fed up with it. I have had it.
Get over it.
It's coming up a lot for me recently because basically I had the dawning realization that my entire life has been trying to manage my father's emotions because he's a fucking emotional disaster. His entire emotions are dependent upon his family. He is incredibly dependent, and he has 3 family members, my mom and my brother and I, who don't give a fuck. Like, we are not dependent. We're not codependent. And, right. Like, my emotional stability is not dependent upon any others of them.
Right.
And his is 100% on us. And it is disgusting. And it's annoying because then when he fucks up and does things that piss the whole family off,
mm-hmm.
and now we won't talk to him, all we get is constant, like, no one loves me. I don't know. No, why won't everyone talk to me? I don't understand.
Oh my God.
And I've hit a fucking wall with it because I'm like, no, you know, because normally I'm always the one that then jumps in and tries to be like, oh, well, we all love you, it's fine, no, don't worry, please,
right.
Don't cry, don't be sad, dad, do a little dance, let's all be happy. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck, go be sad, you fucked up, own your
deal
shit.
With it,
deal with it. You know, it's not on us. Like, if you have emotional issues, go fucking find a way to work those out.
Yeah.
Like, go talk to somebody. Your family's tired of it. We're tired. So anyway, that's why this particular stuff with Anita and Philip really, like, started. I was just like, no, Anita, don't apologize to that asshole. You said nothing wrong.
And he's the one who's trying to set this trap for you. So
yeah, he's trying to entrap you mm-hmm. on the word of a crazy tiny vampire chick who's 1,000 years old.
Yeah. But there are with that role reversal, there's other role reversals within this book, which is pretty cool. Like, you know, you've got the heroines and stuff in our other books, but Philip's the damsel in this book.
Absolutely.
He's the one who gets captured. He's the one who gets tortured, killed, and then she goes on rampage, like you said, gets her revenge. I mean, she's just kicking ass all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not the hero saving the damsel. Well, it is the hero saving the damsel, but it's not the male saving the female.
No, it is 100%, like, just flips that script.
It's pretty cool.
In so many current, like, movies, TV shows, I mean, it's been going on for decades where writers use the capture, torture, and eventual death of a woman character to drive male characters to action. That is, I mean, it is a big issue right now. It's coming up a lot with shows even such as, like, the one that I think of most often is Supernatural, where the women in their lives are constantly murdered.
Yeah, they are.
So that they can go off and fucking kill shit.
Get revenge.
And, like, it gives them an emotional reason to react. And it's disgusting. And, like, it's becoming a real issue. It's like, look, why are women's only role to get killed
right.
so that men can have an emotional reason to go
right.
apeshit? Like, that's, we serve bigger purposes than that. And men can have other reactions to women getting murdered than, I gotta go kill shit now. But in this book, 25 fucking years ago, yeah. Laurel wrote where he's not even a romantic particular interest right. of hers, but she feels kind of responsible for him. He's helping yeah. her more than he really would. Mm-hmm. He stepped beyond just the role of, like, oh, I'll do what the vampire tells me to do. He's kind of being a little bit helpful, and he's putting himself on the line.
Yeah.
So she's feeling responsible for him, and then he goes and gets kidnapped and tortured, and she tries to save him and come to his rescue, and she can't, and he gets killed, and she's like, that's it?
Mm-hmm.
This bitch is gonna die. Because she was not really planning on killing Nicolaus.
No. It wasn't until Philip died. Like you said, Nicolaus hired her or brought her in to find the vampire killer that's going around killing all these vampires. And then she proceeds to antagonize her this whole time while she's, while Anita's trying to work for her. And it's like, bitch, just fucking leave her alone. And then she attacks and kidnaps who she thinks is the boyfriend, who's Philip, which is not the boyfriend, and then just kills him because she's trying to get some rise. She wants something from Anita that, I mean, why would you do that? Like,
it's nonsense.
Ransom or whatever. And she's like, that's not my lover. Do you have nothing on me?
Also, she can read fucking minds. Read Philip's mind and know that they're not love. I don't know.
Right.
This vampire has holes in her logic. It's really all I can say about it. Because she does a number of things yeah. that are illogical throughout this book.
Yeah.
If we are to suppose that her number one goal is to discover who is killing vampires, the rest of her actions do not support that goal. They are almost contradictory mm-hmm. to discovering who is murdering vampires.
She hinders those chances of finding out who the killer is.
So we have to presume that either A, her mind's fucked from being 1,000 years old and only a child, or she doesn't really give a fuck who's killing vampires.
Right.
We can't decide which one of the two. At the end, it doesn't matter, she gets killed.
Right.
So
Anita kills her.
Yep, Anita does. She slays her ass. So I did, but I loved that because I was struggling a little bit. This book seemed a little antiquated with some of its roles, mm-hmm. Some of like the focusing on what all the women look like.
Yeah, there was a lot of describing descriptive words.
Like, they go to this one sex party and like every woman's body is described to a T. There's a little bit of fat shaming on the one plump character at the party. She gets called out, like,
she's not, I noticed that.
And not even like, it's the author voice that is calling her out. Right. It's not even like someone's doing it to her face or anything.
Right.
It's just like, her thighs are like beached whales at one point gets said. And I was like, oh, well, that was unnecessary.
It's pretty harsh.
This is a person who's in passing in this book. Why do we have to do that?
Right.
So I was struggling with those. I was having moments mm-hmm. of like, I was like, oh, this book's too old. I don't think it's good to read anymore. Then, out of the fucking blue, we flip the traditional damsel in distress narrative on its head. And
I think from From what I remember for the next, because I think I'm on like book 7 or 8 or something in this series. It's like that in every book. Anita gets into some situation with some other male and she saves the day. She's the heroine in this series. Obviously, it's Anita Blake, vampire.
Huh? Yeah, and I expected her to save the day. I just don't think I expected the very strict adherence to this narrative done from a reverse gender perspective.
It's flipped. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Because,
usually in books, even where the women are heroines, they still seem a little bit more traditional, or like there just isn't this, like, we're going to completely reverse this gender norm.
Right.
And I really liked it. Mm-hmm. I did. Because, mm-hmm. It was good. It was really well done.
Yeah.
And good on you. Anyway.
That's so good.
Another quirk of Anita's that we should mention is, because I think it's only appropriate.
Duh.
She sleeps with a penguin named Sigmund.
Yes.
She collects stuffed penguins.
She does.
I collect stuffed penguins.
If you guys could just be in this room right now. We sit here talking about dicks and pussies and blowjobs and sex in front of about 56 stuffed penguins. They're all staring at us while we're talking about sex.
And not, I don't collect just stuffed ones, I would like to say. I have a lot of glass penguins and candles and plastic ones.
There's a plethora of penguins just staring at us. There's one Hello Kitty. Everything else. Now, if we were in my office, it'd be Hello Kitty staring at us. There's that one Hello Kitty.
Yeah. So, but I just was, it's like, it comes
up. It was endearing.
It was so cute. She just, yeah. She collects stuffed penguins because she likes, and she wears a dumb penguin shirt to sleep in. And I was like, I used to wear a dumb penguin shirt to sleep in.
It's just, it's human because she's like 23, badass animator. She's an executioner. That's what they dub her. That's her nickname in this book. Mm-hmm. And she sleeps with, that's her comfort when she gets to sleep.
Yeah.
It's a stuffed penguin.
Name Sigma.
Do you name yours? No. Do they have names?
No.
I think
one. Well, Aubergine. That one's Aubergine up there.
The glass one?
Mm-hmm. Because he's kind of shaped like an eggplant. So his name is Aubergine.
He is.
Yeah, he's totally shaped like an eggplant.
Oh my god. That's hilarious. I never noticed that. That's funny.
But most of them, no. There's too many to name. All of them.
Yeah, I'm glad Hello Kitty only has one name already, and it's Hello Kitty.
All right. So.
Do we want to talk about our kiss and tell?
I think so.
Yeah. So we thought because Guilty Pleasures is a strip club that we would talk about things around that nature. So strippers, strip clubs, swing clubs, sex parties type of things. And our experiences or lack of with that. Prior to when we're doing our planning sessions, we do try to get some personal stories in so that we can have something juicy to talk about. And unfortunately, we don't have much to talk about in this sense, but we thought it would still be kind of fun to talk about this, the little bit of experiences that we've had with it. So,
well, I've not been to a strip club.
Like ever?
I cannot. I'm racking my brain and I go, no, I haven't.
Have you ever seen anybody strip? Like, except for on, like, on TV? Like, on real life? In real life?
No.
Never?
No. Have I? No.
No, because for Emily's bachelorette party, we played poker. Yep. And it wasn't strip poker.
Nope.
Oh.
Have we done?
Usually something comes up when we're having these and you get an epiphany and then all of a sudden you remember something.
Didn't we used to play it at your house?
We did strip poker once, didn't we?
Or strip some other card game that we made up.
Wait, with who? It wouldn't have been with Dan.
No. But this would have been back in like Green Valley Ranch in the hot tub.
Oh. Oh.
I don't think so. Now I don't think so.
Did we do something at Rox's house?
I just don't know. I don't think so. Anyway. I really think the story is no.
Okay. Well, I have been to strip clubs. I've been, I don't know, two or three times. I went once with for my sister's bachelorette party when she got married. And it was at PT's. And I think there were only male strippers there. I don't know.
It would have had to have been a special night then, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Because usually PTs is ladies, I thought.
I think they're both. I don't know. I don't know what they are anymore. I have no idea. We took a limo out there and my sister was fucked up. Like, we did bar hopping and stuff like that. And I just babysat the whole time. This is my crazy sister. Which I'm going to tell her to listen to this episode. Hi, sister. Because she's the one who got me this, or no, gave me this book. And was like, read this book. This is a good book. And then I went another time with Dan and a couple of our friends, and so you can buy dances, like not private, like behind the scene kind of dances, mm-hmm. but you can buy dances if you, at least this is one way, you put a dollar in front of you, and so you put the dollar there, and then they'll pick up the dollar, and then they'll, like, do a special dance for you for a minute or something. So he did that, he put a dollar in front of me, he asked me first, because I was just sitting there, like, watching these women dance. I'm like, that's cool, they're dancing, and like, I don't even remember if they were naked, I don't remember. So he puts a dollar in front of me and she starts dancing, like, on me. Mm-hmm. And then I think she did ask for permission to touch me. And I was like, sure. And then she put her boobs all over my face. And, I mean, she was really nice. She was beautiful and everything. And then I was just like, I was not comfortable with it. I wasn't mad at her. Mm-hmm. I wasn't mad at anybody. I wasn't mad. I was just not in my comfort zone at that moment. So I felt I almost felt guilty. And I don't know why, but it was not a very pleasant feeling. So I told Dan, and I was like, I don't ever want another private dance ever again. I don't care if it's a boy or a girl or whatever. I mean, you know, like, it was nothing against her and what she does. I have no hate against that. I think it's what they do. She did beautiful. She did a great job. I just, for me, was not comfortable with it. So, if we're going to go again as a couple or with friends, we'll go. But I'm go sip like a Shirley Temple in the corner or something like that. bring some playing cards, a book, or something, and just yeah. That's really it. I mean, my sister also had a stripper come to the house, and he came in as a cop. His name was Jeremy, which is funny because her husband's name is Jeremy. And he was gorgeous. He was a beautiful guy. But I'm not really into the whole stripping scene. I just, the male anatomy. I like him. I like him better with clothes on. Well, I mean, I like
well-dressed men look like, really yeah. good. I think for me, it's the public nature of it.
Oh, okay.
It's not intimate.
Sure.
So it's like, well, I'm not going to, you know, there's like 12 of us watching this stripper. It's like, I don't feel like this
yeah.
is, this isn't a sexy environment.
Right. Well.
It's not, it's something that doesn't turn me on. It's just, you're just, I don't know.
And I can see that coming from you. You're a very private person. You're more of a private person.
I mean, like, if I want to get horny, I'll do that privately.
Right.
You know,
by myself doors. Or with a partner. Yeah. Where the lights are off and you can't see or hear anything.
Well, not anything. Not that bad. Jeez.
I think I would agree with that. I'm a little bit more open to it, but I don't know. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I always tease Dan about doing, like, I'm like, we should be swingers and, like, go to a swing club. I don't know if that's a thing.
No, I'm sure somewhere it is.
Yeah, and like, you know, find a couple that are swingers and do the switchy thing. And he's just like, okay. And he would totally do it. He would do it in a heartbeat. Because sex is just sex to Dan. There's no emotions with sex for him. So, I know the things that man says.
The things that he says are crazy.
But
I feel like it's easy to say that when he knows you're joking.
That's true, because I joke about
like,
shit.
I think
all
it's easy
time.
For him to be like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Sex is just sex. But I think that if it were to come down to it, I think both of you'd be like, whoa.
I know for sure. I'd be like, sorry, no, stop here. Red light, no green light. Like, it would just be that. I don't know, though. I think I believe him on that. And it, I mean, I don't really know how I feel about that. Like, I'm not mad about it, but I'm not. I don't know. I just don't have any feelings on that. Mainly because I feel like it'll never happen. I always tell him when he goes out, even when he goes to work, I'm like, hey, I hope you score, you know, just just jokingly.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So that was really...
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry. This one's a...
This was really hard for
this,
us.
This is a hard book.
To pull a thing to talk about.
Yeah. So there goes our stripper talk. But hey, we can get into our fun fuck fact.
Yeah.
So our fun fact for the episode is from faithofvampire.wordpress.com, and it is, why are women attracted to vampires? So we just wanted to kind of talk about, like, what's up with vampires and why we keep coming back to.
Because this book had kind of a spectrum from Monica, who was a human who completely in love with vampires.
She's infatuated.
Seemed to spend a lot of time at Guilty Pleasures, knew all the vampires there, was obvious, like, had bite marks on her neck. She was into it. She was into the vampire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anita, who was like, nope, fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to hang out with vampires. If I get a warrant to kill them, I will kill them.
Yep. Which is, anybody that chooses to go on with this series, she falls in love with Jean-Claude. So, yeah.
God, he didn't seem as like a sex symbol to me. I was really struggling with that at the end. I think I might have to go back and reread his description. But I definitely pictured a short, older French man.
Really?
Like, I'm trying to think of the actor who I pictured, but it was definitely not someone who I would be like.
That's so funny. Well, I have the comic strips of this book, like the comics, because they have
a graphic novel.
Yes, graphic novels of these, and I love reading them because you could. They're great pictures. Mm-hmm. And Jean-Claude is very handsome. He's like I'm not in love with Fabio, but it's like that type where he's like built and muscular with the longer
hair.
That
is not at all who I was picturing. I was picturing like a 50-year-old short Frenchman.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
No, he's supposed to be like a...
I don't know. I crossed like signals an Adonis, or something. Like... And I was just like... Then at the end where like he was like, come dancing with me. I was like, no, he's way too old for you. Also, he's a vampire.
He is a vampire. Anyway, Why do women love vampires? This guy did some research and found as many answers as there are female personalities. So obviously,
shocking.
There's a ton
of everyone has different opinions.
But for instance, he says that some believe that women have a secret desire to be controlled by men, and being bitten borders on a form of S&M. In today's open sexual society, there are many women that fantasize about being tied up and controlled during sex. Others say that vampires are the ultimate bad boy. No woman would ever consider marrying one, but the time with them would be exciting. So that's all sorts of reasons. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, I take a little bit of issue with the first one. I think it's easy to say that's like, I think that's why certain men think women want vampires, is because they think women want to be dominated by men.
Right.
And there's way too much generalization in that sentence to make me comfortable with it, because one, I feel like that's just our daily lives, and we're not all that interested in it anyway.
We're subjected to it on a daily basis.
That's kind of how we live, so I don't think we need to fantasize about it. I think the obsession with vampires, and I don't think it's just one way, like, it's not only women, but I think it's definitely much more likely to stem from the eternal youth, beauty, and life.
Yes, yeah.
Well, that they represent. It? Humans are terrified of death. They don't want to think about it. It scares us. It's unpleasant. We don't know what it is. So, like, these creatures that are not only immortal, but almost to a T are beautiful young
people. They're perfect.
People.
Except like, for that they're dead.
Yes. Yeah. Is that's the fascination. Mm-hmm. It's the eternal life. It's the cheating death. And maintaining, like, no age, maintaining your youthful, perfect beauty forever.
Yep.
That is what people are obsessed with.
Powers, super strong.
And especially for women who live in a society that are continuously telling us, you have an expiration date.
Mm-hmm.
You fucking hit 40 or so, and you don't matter. Yeah. Like, you're not attractive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, like, what people want to see. We don't see you in movies or TV shows or, you know.
Nobody cares about you
anymore. Like, you become invisible to society. So the idea of staying young is infinitely more attractive, I think, to women, because society just tells us that we have to fear age, because we have to fear obsolescence. That's not a word.
Sure.
Obsolescence is a word.
Obsolescence sounds sound fine to me. Obsolescence.
But, you know, and that's, I think, and obviously I have no statistics. But also, I'd like to say that I'm pretty sure that where we got that article is just a blog.
No, it is totally just a blog. It's not a fact. That was a fun fuck blog.
Fun,
that was fun an pseudo FFB. Fact. That was not a fact. Yes.
So it's just a topic. It's just like, yeah.
Also, we had a hard time finding a fun fuck fact.
We totally
episode.
Did for this episode.
Which is bullshit. This is good.
But no, but I don't think he's wrong in that is the assumption.
Sure.
Especially, like, for men who don't understand the genre very much and are like, oh, women are weird. They just want to fuck animals and vampires.
Creatures.
And I don't think that's really what it stems from.
No.
At all. I think it's much more this idea of immortality and youth.
That and the way that these vampires are portrayed are most, if not, I mean, I really can't think of any of them that aren't romantic.
They're romantic.
They're lovers. They're known lovers.
And they're all old enough to have that quality of chivalry that is supposedly maybe or not dead.
Right.
In today's society, quote unquote dead.
Yeah. The jacket over the puddle, the opening of the door.
You know, they come from a different era.
Right.
When women were women and men were men.
Right.
I don't know. Bullshit. Fuck all of you. You had to wear fucking corsets back then. Go to hell. I don't want to talk about that's bullshit. But yeah, so I think that's part of it too, is they're particularly written romantically to, I mean, they're in our fucking books, of course they are.
And they're
that's the whole fucking point.
They're super strong and great lovers and just always rich. And
oh, they're so rich. So have you ever met a poor vampire?
No, I want to meet a really, really old, fat, unattractive, hobo vampire. I want to meet a hobo vampire. Can I meet one that got turned when he was like 90? Like, I need to.
90.
Yes, that'd be a terrible life.
I feel like in some of the Charlene Harris books, I think some of their vampires weren't perfect.
Are you talking about
The Stooky Stackhouse.
Oh, True yeah. Blood. No, you, whatever form you got bit in was how you looked as the vampire. Yeah. Which I thought was awesome, because then you weren't always.
Because there were some, like, fat vampires.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Like, if you and I were to get bit by a vampire right now, I mean.
So pissed.
I'd be so pissed. I'd be like, can you wait till I lose, like, 40 pounds? And then, you know, just...
Also, don't. Just don't bite me. I don't want to be a goddamn vampire. I hate immortality. Like, I don't know why I have such a strong opinion against it, but I do. I don't understand the obsession with it. I don't like it. Please. I don't... It's not like I enjoy aging. I don't. I work for an agency for seniors, and there's nothing scarier than, in particularly in our country, aging. It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't do it well. We don't have a system set up for it. We do not take care of our elders.
Right.
So I'm not, like, looking forward to growing old.
Sure.
But I do not want to live forever.
Right, right.
So, fuck it.
I think if I was single, had nothing to lose, I'm all for it. But I've got a family that I don't want to be a vampire around, because that would just be wrong.
That would really confuse your children, I think.
It would.
They'd be like, Mommy, why am I now as old as you?
They may still say that. I'm Asian.
That's true.
I think I'm going to age well. But, yeah. So there goes that.
All right. Those are our topics.
Yeah.
It's our ideas, guys.
Yeah, guys.
Hope you enjoyed them. So hard. So hard recording.
Hey, we have to come up with, I mean, like...
There's a lot of shit.
This is where we need you guys. We need you guys to come back and tell us what books to read, what topics to talk about, what current events that you want us to touch on. I mean, not that I know too much about it, but Kalina does. She's the smart one.
I should have brought it up earlier, but I didn't. I'm going to bring it up now.
Is it the boobs? I was talking about boobs earlier. I don't know what
it wasn't the boobs. In relation to our 5 minutes ago conversation about attractiveness and beauty and beauty culture and women's, you know, not feeling like like we have an expiration date, or like vampires are always beautiful, but except for in the Sookie Stackhouse books where maybe sometimes they're fat. I just listened to the perfect podcast about this, guys. I don't know if anyone listens to Ologies. It's a podcast by Allie Ward, and she just talks to scientists about their different specialties. And the one she did just this week, which was, it actually came out last week. So in this world, August, let's say 20th, probably. That works. Sometime around there of 2018. I'm going to date that so that everyone who wants to go find this art, like this episode, should be able to.
Okay.
And it's on Kellology, which is the study of human beauty. And it was the best episode because it was just this psychiatrist or psychologist who investigates like beauty culture and what it does to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, where does it come from? Where are the pressures coming from? What are companies doing? And then what is the psychological effect on people and humans?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I was just bawling for the whole episode because basically the long and short of it is we're fucked. We're way fucked.
Already, like, more than we're already fucked with other shit that we're going through?
Yeah. And, well, because there doesn't really seem to be a way to fix this.
Oh,
because the companies have no incentive to. They are incentivized by us feeling shitty so they can sell us products.
Right.
And then they continue to make us feel shitty and sell us more fucking products. And there's a high emphasis on women in this episode, but she also touches on, you know, what the beauty culture does to men and, you know, the transgender community, the gender neutral community, like just how much this pressure is on every human. And they get this cross-cultural because there's differences across, you know, the world. Not everyone has the same cultural standards, beauty standards. And so it's just, I highly recommend it. Go and listen to it. You'll be upset. You'll cry. There's no silver lining, but it's worth learning because it's like, the more you can, like, start to counteract the thoughts in your head or, like, start doing small things. Like, one of the recommendations is if you feel bad and you spend a lot of time on Instagram looking at, like, maybe health sites or fitness sites or body or, like, models.
Yeah.
Stop. Take those and get rid of them. Replace them all with pictures of dogs and cats.
Okay.
Because that's going to be better. Anyway, I don't want to ruin the episode. I want other people to go listen.
Yeah.
But anyway, do that. It's totally worth it.
Wow. Okay.
So, side note.
No, that was great.
Other podcasts are great.
Well, good.
Thanks. And that kind of tied in, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we got there. And then I was thinking about it as we were talking about it. And I was like, I need to remember this.
We always forget that. And then we come back around. It's all
big,
good.
Big giant circles of crazy.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
So,
what are we reading next?
You want to talk about that, or you want to rate this first?
Oh, we should rate this.
Yeah, we should rate it. I'm going to have to rate this not knowing the next couple of books, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. You like know what's coming.
I know what's coming.
So. I don't know what's coming.
Yeah. So
you have to rate just this book standalone, mm-hmm. Guilty Pleasures.
Yeah. Well, sex, obviously.
Like, there was
none.
Four.
It was, yeah. Like, I'm going to have to say, like, two or three. Like, there was nothing.
There was nothing. I just feel bad giving it that low a score. Because.
Don't mean it to be so bad. It's just, I mean, if we're talking, like, because we have our two scales. Of course, we never have that
ready. Why do we never have our scales
ready? That's the one thing that we don't have ready ever.
Ever.
Only, not because it's bad, but because there wasn't anything.
There just was no sex. There really wasn't.
So,
and like, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a one, because one is a waste of my time.
No, it did not waste my time.
Two is limp dick. Three is disappointing dry hump.
Name me a three.
I'm going to have to say either two or three, four is blue balls, and there was no arousal.
No, there wasn't. We weren't, like, teased with anything.
No teasing. It's not a bad two. It's not a bad three.
No.
So it's between there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I concur.
But I do love the book. Like, I love the storyline in the book. I love Anita. She's just such a badass. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give this one an 8.
Okay.
As far as the story goes, like the book.
The book, the plot, yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I think I will give it more like a 7. Mm-hmm. 6.5, 7. Again, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's a real early book. Like, I know it's the first in the series, but mm-hmm. I also think it's kind of maybe a beginning writing. I found a lot of plot holes where things were just like not making sense.
Yeah.
Which does detract. But again, like I told you earlier, I read a lot of detective books.
Right.
And this kind of started off as a detective book where she had to solve a crime, and then it just went off the rails.
Yeah.
Because she didn't really solve anything.
It gets fucking crazier as those books come in.
Yeah. And so reading it thinking that genre and like reading it the way I do those books, which is to try to find the whodunit before the end of the book so you can win.
Yeah.
I was like, this is what? And so I'm going to give it, 6.5, 7. It's still good. It was very entertaining. Like, I really did enjoy it. But then I even afterwards was like, they never wrapped up. What the fuck was that about?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool. Good. Go ahead. Read it. I will continue on with the series. I'm interested. I want to know more.
Awesome.
See where she goes from here.
Great. That's good. Cool. Yeah. If you would like to borrow any of the graphic novels, let me know. Not any. I only have the first two or three.
Right. I probably would, because I guess I need to see what this Jean-Claude looks like. Yeah. And apparently it is not a 50-year-old tiny Frenchman.
He is not a tiny Frenchman. But, okay. So our next book we are going to read, Deadly Alchemy by Julie Morgan. And it's going to be narrated by Fiona Thrale?
We're guessing that's her name.
Yes. Once again, we apologize for the pronunciation of your last name. But yeah, so...
Yeah, come back 2 weeks from now for that book.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, thank you.
It's
been great.
Yes.
Please reach out on all of our social media. Talk to us. Tell us things. Give us feedback that's nice and positive and doesn't make us feel shitty about ourselves. We are Dirty Books on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and that is all with 3 H's.
And visit us at our website, our blog site, shdirtybooks.com, and find all of our episodes everywhere on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, and all of those places. Anywhere you would find a podcast. Yeah, so, yeah. This is Saylet.
And this is Kalina.
And we'll see you later.
Bye.
Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy music and amazing introduction.